The real estate firm Kushner Companies apologized this week for that sales pitch it made to Chinese investors considering a project in New Jersey. Nicole Kushner Meyer invoked the name of her brother, Jared Kushner, of course, President Trump's son-in-law and close advisor, and critics cried foul, conflict of interest. In addition, flyers for the event said, invest $500,000 and immigrate to the U.S. And a key part of the pitch was the EB-5 visa, which gives foreigners a path to live in the U.S. if they invest big money in business projects. Now, the EB-5 program has long been controversial. Now it's under the spotlight again. And White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said it's under review along with all other visa programs. So let's get a primer on some of them. From Hiroshi Motomura, with us by Skype, he's a professor of immigration and citizenship at UCLA School of Law and author of the book Immigration Outside the Law. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So start with the EB-5 visas. They've been getting a lot of attention lately, but what exactly do they do?
Well, EB-5 visas is a form of getting a green card or what's called lawful permanent residence in the United States. It's a way to immigrate to the country legally, and it requires people who want to immigrate to make an investment. And the investment could be $1 million, but that number is reduced to $500,000 in certain areas that are rural or have high unemployment or other economic disadvantage.
Right. And, of course, the accusation by critics of the EB-5 visas is that people are fudging that. First of all, a lot of these projects aren't in areas that people might see as rural, certainly, or with a lot of unemployment.
Well, that's true, but you have to think about really how these things are zoned. In other words, you can have a big city project, and the people around the country might think of it, oh, it's in a big city, and that's not a high unemployment area. But it turns out that it does create jobs for people in close by high unemployment areas and allows them to commute in and work.
And the requirement is that the person who invests in and then receives the EB-5 visa, their investment has to create at least 10 jobs. Look, it's seen as a way for foreigners to buy citizenship.
Well, you could think of it, I suppose, or characterize it as buying your way into the country. But, you know, of course, it's all a matter of characterization. This is also a way to attract investment in the United States and to create jobs for American workers.
Well, as we said, there are critics. Senators Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Grassley, she a Democrat, he a Republican, have co-sponsored a bill to end the program because of concerns that this is just selling citizenship at a very high level. And we understand more than 80% of those who get the EB-5 visas are Chinese, so there are concerns there. And it just got renewed late last week.
There are different issues here, right? One is whether there ought to be an investor visa at all. The second issue is how it's run. The third is the recent controversy regarding Jared Kushner. And the fourth is the concentration of recipients in China. A lot of the objections have to do with the fact that there is, in some sense, it looks like buying your way into the country. But I think one of the important things to remember is that this is also job creation. And so some people are concerned that the people with certain means can get into the country. But it's in some ways, it's not that different from the fact that there are many legal ways to get into the country if you have a college degree. And you can pay for an attorney, which has obviously some financial requirements to be able to pay.
Let's move on to the H-1B visas. These allow foreigners who work in specialty occupations, that's technology, engineering, math, business, to work in the country for 3 years. They can renew those visas as long as they remain employed. Talk more about the H-1B visa.
Well, the H-1B visa is also like some of the other visa programs. Become controversial. It's a program that does not necessarily lead to permanent residence in the United States, and therefore does not necessarily lead to citizenship. There's been concern about some H-1B workers displacing American workers, but in many cases, the alternative to that kind of dynamic would be for the company itself to entirely go overseas, and that really wouldn't help the U.S. job situation at all. So I think a lot of the solutions really lie not so much in preventing the H-1B program, but making sure that it operates the way Congress intended it to operate. And the other is to provide other forms of relief and retraining and education for U.S. workers that may feel that they're displaced.
Yeah. President Trump has been both for and against the H-1B visas. He really was against them in the campaign. But then he wrote on his website, I'm softening the position because we have to have talented people in this country. But then he hardened it again, saying, I will end forever the use of the H-1B as a cheap labor program and institute an absolute hire American workers first program, no exceptions. So we're a little all over the place on that. But who would react the most if we got rid of the H-1B visas? Is this Silicon Valley?
That general economic sector has been, I guess you would say, a heavy user of H-1B visas. But, you know, I don't think we should stereotype it exactly to that. I mean, yeah. H-1B program is also essential in smaller numbers for all kinds of industries. It does require, generally speaking, a college degree. And it's a situation where H-1B workers could be used for teachers, for example, and a lot of people with training. And so all kinds of American employers benefit from having temporary workers, whether it's a business or university.
By the way, the H-1Bs are capped at 85,000. You can't give out more than that. Talk about the H-2 visas. These are the seasonal worker visas, agricultural workers or waiters or housekeepers. And it seems odd because it requires that employers have to prove that they couldn't fill these positions with American citizens. But when you look around any vacation area, you know, you wonder if they could.
Well, H-2 programs, they fall into two categories. There's the H-2A program in agriculture. There's the H-2B program and everything else. And so they are, in theory, for people who are taking jobs that for which there's a shortage of U.S. workers. The idea here is to fill those jobs that then allow, for example, a hotel to keep operating or a farm to keep operating because American workers aren't available in sufficient numbers. Now, I think the counterargument to that has always been, well, if you paid more, then you would get American workers to be housekeepers or to pick crops. The difficulty there is that that would increase the prices to American consumers in such a way that, for example, people wouldn't buy the strawberries, and in fact, the farm would go out of business and the strawberries would be brought in from another country. So this is yet another example of operating a global economy. I think one of the things to remember about the H-2A and the H-2B programs is that these are for people who, generally speaking, don't have college degrees. They're not professionals. They're working in farm labor. They're working, for example, as housekeepers or in landscape. And what you have here is one of the very few ways to come to this country legally if you don't have a college degree.
Well, we should say that according to the Washington Post, Donald Trump's vineyard in Charlottesville, Virginia, applied for 6 H-2A visas. That's for the agriculture. And also Mar-a-Lago, apparently the resort in Florida, requested 78 H-2B visas for servers, housekeepers, cooks and the like. And that Donald Trump, when asked about this at a debate during the campaign, said it's very, very hard to get people. But other hotels do the exact same thing. There's nothing wrong with it. We have no choice. And it goes to show that when you need them, you know, when this serves your business, you are usually for these visas.
Right. So I think that this is an example of the economic needs of this country. And one of the fundamental problems with the U.S. economic and immigration systems, if you look at them together, is there's a mismatch between the economic system and the immigration system. The U.S. economy has a great need for workers all up and down the education and training spectrum, people who don't have formal educations, people who have PhDs. But the immigration system makes it very difficult to come to the United States to work if you don't have a college degree. There is no line to stand in for those jobs.
Well, we just mentioned in passing, there's also the H-1B-3, the model visa, which allows, it's sort of a subset of highly skilled workers visa. It allows people in the modeling industry to come. There's the O-1, the artist or genius visa. This is athletes, musicians, famous authors, others who may come in. If you're coming for a specific competition, that's a P-1 athlete's visa. And there's, of course, the F-1, which is the student visas. Look, can a president just withdraw a visa? How do you take away a visa or the possibility of one?
Well, at one level, Congress defines the category. So any president has to work within that congressional structure or ask Congress to change it. But then every administration has the opportunity to refine some of the requirements and also to apply the requirements in any individual case.
Fascinating. Hiroshi Motomura, professor of immigration and citizenship at UCLA School of Law, author of the book Immigration Outside the Law, taking a look at the many visas there are. Professor Hiroshi, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.